Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Premier Field Engineer Rob Hefner joins us on today's show as we talk about the necessary steps your organization should consider when making a Windows deployment. Tune in as we cover VDI scenarios, the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, WDS, System Center, and much, much more. Lex, the mic is yours.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Taste of Premier Podcast. I am Cornelius. I'm Lex Thomas, and I'll be your host today. With me, I have Rob Hefner, and Rob is an outstanding PFE. If you remember from one of our earlier episodes, we had TJ Spar, who was also a PFE, and these guys are awesome. I love them to death. I used to be one. Hey, Rob, how's it going?
Doing good, Lex. How are you today?
I'm doing great. So today we're going to talk about deployment. The name of today's episode is, of course, 3-2-1 Deploy. And we're going to talk about how to get from XP to Windows 7. But before we get into that, you know, just tell us a little bit about yourself, Rob. How long have you been with Microsoft?
Sure. So I've been at Microsoft for 10 years now. Got my start in the phone queues in the CTS department. Since then, I've moved on to be a premier field engineer to actually get in front of customers and share my experience.
Yep. Awesome. So you're in Dallas, right?
That is correct. Dallas, Texas.
Yeah. And how much of your time is actually spent in Dallas?
Lately, only about half of it.
Huh. So where are you the rest of the time?
I'm with you, Lex.
Yeah, so I guess the cat's out of the bag. Rob is my platform's PFE extraordinaire. Love him to death. You know, he's brilliant, and he's with me 90% of the time at NASA when I go visit my customers at NASA. And speaking of NASA, we are in the midst of doing a XP to Windows 7 deployment, and Rob has been instrumental in that, and that's kind of what inspired this episode. And so, Rob, I'm going to hand it over to you and let you get things kind of kicked off. And I'll sit back and listen, and I'll let you know if I have any questions.
Sounds good. So today we want to talk about the challenges that you're going to face with an enterprise deployment. There are a number of factors that come into play when you're migrating from XP to Windows 7. The first place you should really start is understanding the differences between Windows XP and Windows 7 deployments. There have been a lot of changes, a lot of streamlines that we've made to make things easier for you so that you can get deployed as quickly as possible. So there's a few things we have to take into account, right? So are we going to be replacing the current hardware that we have? Does it support Windows 7? Do we even know if it supports Windows 7? Or are we going to go ahead and supply new hardware to all of our users? So there's a couple of ways that we can go about making this easier for you. So there is the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, which you can install and run in your environment, do an inventory of all machines, and we'll tell you, do we need to update drivers? Are they included with the Windows 7 image? That way you can go ahead and start planning, so we can say, all right, we need to replace at least half of our machines. So once we get through that, then we have to start thinking about application compatibility. You know, which applications are required for our business to run the most. We want to start with our mission critical applications. Let's go ahead and get virtual machines make a perfect test bed. When we can install Windows 7, we can install our applications and go ahead and do some testing just to ensure that we're not going to run into any issues. Virtual machines.
Yeah, and there are so many tools out there right now that will just allow you to take a piece of hardware, virtualize that, and migrate it into a VM, which is almost tailor-made for doing this stuff, right? I mean, you can move an XP box over into a VM and then migrate it over as many times as you want as a test, you know, in a test scenario.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we also provide the application compatibility toolkit, which will actually do an inventory of the applications on your machine against a known database to determine which applications are Windows 7 compatible and which ones aren't. Now, while this is a great tool, you don't want to undermine the fact that you understand your environment, you know what applications are mission critical, and we need to actually do proper testing to ensure those are going to function. Now, we do have other options, should that be the case. One feature of Windows 7 is actually Windows Virtual PC Mode, which provides an XP image with rail functionality so that you can actually remote applications from your Windows XP environment into your Windows 7 desktop. So last resort, we have plenty of options available for you, and we just want to make this as easy for you as possible.
Wow, so that's awesome. So let's say that I'm 6 months out. You know, I've set up the VMs. I've decided which applications are mission critical, which applications, you know, are important but maybe not mission critical applications, and which applications, you know, I really don't, you know, I don't care if Tetris moves over. Sorry to the Tetris folks I may have just offended. But yeah, you know, that's the deal, right? This is a corporate environment. And so what do I do next?
So next, we have to look at a couple of more things. We need to make sure our data migration is going to be successful. So we need to look at, you know, are we using roaming user profiles, or do we have local user profiles? How long has it been since some of these accounts have been logged onto these machines? That's actually a big challenge that a lot of people, it just doesn't come to mind readily, because you think, okay, well, we need to get everything over. When you're trying to deploy Windows 7 as quickly as possible, it may not be necessary to actually migrate all data. Maybe we just need to back it up and store it in a central location, determine which user accounts have been logged on, say, in the past 3 to 6 months, and only migrate those accounts. So there's a couple of ways that we can do that. Overall, what you want to be using is the user state migration tool, USMT, to actually migrate your user data. It's a great set of scripts that we've put together that will actually query the machine. You can also set up exclusions based off that as well, so you can decide, I really don't want to copy over all of this guy's MP3s from his profile directory, for example. And then we actually integrate that into a migration plan to Windows 7. So again, old profiles may actually hinder that process. So there's a couple of ways we can do this. There's actually a profile list registry key that actually stores all this information that we can query. There's a couple of ways we can use Delprof, which is a 2003 resource kit tool, which will actually go through and dump out all of the profiles that are on the machine. We can also use that to clean up the profiles that are on the machine and only use a subset which have logged in, for example, 30 days. There are also scripts that have been created by the product group that we can leverage with MDT, which is one of our provided solutions to make your deployments to Windows 7 easier. Now, this script can go out and do the same thing as Delprof and actually clean up all of the profiles that are not needed before we do the migration.
Yeah, we ran into that at a customer that I've already talked about earlier. where we had, I can't remember how many profiles we ended up finding on the machine, but I think 200 profiles.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, about 200 profiles. And so the bad thing is, right, the thing that customers don't realize is that somebody logs into that machine, it creates a profile, right? And if you've got a machine that's, especially a machine that's like in a library or in a public space, one of the things that you'll run into is that, you know, 200 people log into that machine, and then you get to the point where, you know, somebody tries to log in, there's not really enough disk space, they look at who, you know, at where all the disk space is going, they see those profile directories out there, not empty, I almost said empty, but those profile directories out there, and so what is the first thing that they do? They start deleting those profile directories because they know that John doesn't work here anymore, and Sally, you know, is got a new machine and she's been transferred to another department. So I don't need those directories on this hard drive. So they start deleting those. But that doesn't fix anything, really. It cleans up some hard drive space, but you still have a reference to those profiles in the registry. And now we're in a situation where those profiles are registered in the registry, but they're not actually mapped to a physical location on the disk. Right? And that's where Delprof comes in, because that saved us at NASA.
Absolutely. We cut down their times tremendously just by cleaning up the profiles. And again, they were backing up the user data. So we knew that if in the event that we had to restore something, that we had access to it. great contingency plan.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we went from 200 profiles on that one box, the box that we're talking about, to what, like, I can't remember how many, but
it's
only
41.
Like, yeah, yeah. Well, 41's still a huge number, right? But we went from 200 to 41, and that's a huge decrease in the number of valid profiles. And then what we did is DelProf has that switch that we used, right? I think it was in DelProf, if not, correct me. Yeah, that said, okay, if the profile hasn't been used in 90 days or 60 days, I think is what we ended up with, then don't migrate it, right?
Right. So it actually goes in and cleans it up so that when we run USMT, it's not picking up on these stale profiles.
Yeah, absolutely. And that made a world of difference, right? And those were profiles that maybe were whole profiles, right? So just to clarify for anybody that's trying to follow this, and good Lord, I feel so sorry for you, but because I'm just kind of rambling a bit, but we started out with 200 profiles. Some of those profiles, they all existed in the registry. They didn't all exist on the hard drive. Somebody had deleted some of those profile directories. And so we cleaned all that up with DelProf, and then we went back and said, okay, now the rest of the profiles are valid, but we only care about profiles that have been used the last 60 days. So we'll run it again and just migrate those. Anything, Dad?
I think that sums up that topic. That's something we can get some feedback on and cover in more detail in another episode if we'd like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so thanks for bearing with me. But I just wanted to point that out because I want to make sure that everybody that's listening to this understands what a cool tool DelProf is and how much time it'll actually save them. All right. Back to you, Rob.
All right. So now that we've understand, you know, we've got a plan for how we're going to migrate our user data, let's think about how do we want to deploy our image. So if we're getting new hardware, maybe we need a technician to actually go out and set up the hardware and actually go through the installation process themselves. Maybe you don't want anyone to touch the machine and you just want to push out the image yourself. Maybe you want to let your users do it. There's tons of options available to you. The point being is that based on your deployment plan, there are some things to take into account. So let's talk about our initial image. One thing that hasn't changed from the XP days is that we still need to sys prep an image before we actually push it out to a new machine. One thing that you always need to keep in mind when you're testing your image during these early days, all the way up until you create your final image, is that you need to run sysprep in audit mode. So if we use the generalize option, which is what actually goes out and strips out all of your machine-specific information, we can only do that 3 times. After that, you would have to create a new image. So make sure you're using the audit mode, which is the drop-down box in sysprep when you're creating your image. So then we have the debate of thick versus thin images. So thick image would have all of your applications already bundled in your image, all of your drivers. It just creates a really big file to actually push over the network. A thin image utilizes just the WIM file, which is your base operating system, and then we leverage other technologies to include drivers and updates during the actual deployment. This is actually our recommended method of doing Windows 7 deployments. One of the things that with custom deployment technologies and XP, a lot of customers used scripts to actually queue chain updates together or push drivers through using the sysprep INF. Now we make that a whole lot easier for you with MDT. We actually provide a driver repository for you, so you can actually go through and set up individual folders for all of the different hardware types you're going to be deploying and then actually store your drivers in a central location. That is extremely handy and is something that you want to keep up to date throughout the entire process of your deployment. Also, security updates is another thing to keep in mind. Anytime we come out with security updates every month, go ahead and download those and let's get them in a central location as well. So that's where it's really up to you how you want to do your deployment. There's options available for you and we're here to help. So the next piece that we want to take into account is activation. So Windows licenses require activation. And we've done our best to make sure that this is easy for you to take into account as well. So for most enterprise customers, they're going to be using a volume license agreement. In this case, if you haven't already looked at key management services, this would be the time to go ahead and start setting that up and looking at it. Key management service is going to provide you the ability to automatically activate your domain join machines when they're on the network. This makes things a lot easier for you and also provides you some level of inventory as well on what machines have been activated. There are other options available with MAC keys. There is a tool called VAMT. That also will allow you to do batch activations of MAC keys, much in the same sense that KMS works, but it is a manual process that you would have to kick off. One other thing to keep in mind, too, with the big change in Windows 7 is that we have BitLocker support. This is something to take into account when you're looking at whether we're going to be replacing hardware or not, and this is something that the assessment and planning toolkit can help with. So the reason that we will have to look at new hardware is BitLocker actually leverages a chip on the motherboard called a TPM chip to actually enforce security. So we actually use this along with either a USB key or a PIN that the user creates and enters in to actually provide access to the machine. Most of your enterprise-level machines that are shipping today have that, but that's something that you want to look at specifically when you're looking to support BitLocker. You'll also want to make sure that you're keeping these BIOS up to date on these machines as well.
Wow, so that's awesome. So that's what we do when we're 6 months out, or between the 6 and the 3 month space, right? So now we've done all that stuff. We've built the VMs. We've tested. We've determined what we want to pull over, what we don't want to pull over. We've looked at profiles. We've determined whether or not we're going to use BitLocker. Now we're 3 months out. What do we need to do next?
So at 3 months out, we really need to start making sure that our image is ready to go, that we have our deployment strategy set, and let's start testing. So one of the things that you might think about is using your administrators as your initial pilot, maybe even a subset of your help desk. That way you can get your help desk ramped up while you're working on your deployment. The last thing that you want is a help desk that's not prepared to support the Windows 7 image once it's rolled out. That's something else to keep in mind, is that you are going to have to provide support for this internally, and what better way to ramp up your engineers than to go ahead and have them assist with the deployment. Having your administrators assist with the deployment as well and actually pilot the image is a good way for them to get used to new management tools, also see how their tools are affected in the environment as well. Better to be prepared than find out last minute that your administrator can't do what he needs to do in his daily job because it wasn't tested beforehand.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are excellent points. Then what?
So it's been 3 months since we created our initial image. If we've been keeping up with security updates, we're going to have 3 months of updates now that we need to make sure is part of our deployment. Also, there may be new drivers that have come out from the vendor. Luckily, most vendors' websites, if you go to their support pages for a particular model, a lot of them provide options to download all the drivers available, which makes it easy for you. Now, one thing that could be difficult is that these images or these driver packages are actually packed up to the point that they have to run through a setup program in order to install the driver. So let's go take a look at the MDT console and see how this is made easier for you. So this is the deployment workbench, which is part of MDT 2010 Update 1. So we'll just give you a brief overview here of the options that are available, and then I want to show you some of the cool things that we can do to help you out with your deployment. So our main deployment share is set up. We have a folder that's actually shared out on the volume that will actually store all of the images, drivers, and packages, applications that are set up for our deployment. So I've already gone through and added a Windows 7 WIM file. So how I did this was simply going to import operating system. And then here we have the options. If we've already created a custom WIM file using sysprep and then imagex, which is a part of the Windows Automated Installation Kit, which is something that you'll want to start playing with immediately. We can choose that option here. We can point it to a DVD for Windows 7. Or if we say we had a WDS, a Windows Deployment Services image, which was the replacement for RIS in 2003, we could actually import that image as well. In this case, I just pointed to a Windows 7 Enterprise X64 DVD and imported this image into my store. Now, once I've done that, I want to go in here and let's say, for example, that this is going to be an EliteBook 8540W. This is going to be a folder that I'm going to create under out-of-box drivers. It's going to store all the drivers for this particular model. So I've already downloaded the driver packages from my vendor. They were packaged up into a self-extracting EXE. So before I can go through this route, I actually had to go and unpack that. So either run the executable or use a zip program to go ahead and extract that. So specifically what we're looking for here are the INF files for the driver installation. That's where we're going to read to match the plug-and-play ID to make sure that we're getting the right driver and right settings for that device. So I've got mine stored on an external drive here, noted by these folders. So I'm just going to point to the root of the folder. And then we're going to go ahead and parse through. And you'll notice that we're going through, reading the INFs, because there may be multiple INFs that are present in that driver package, in this case to support 32 or 64-bit. And we're going to go ahead and pull those into our driver store. So in this case, it was an Intel network adapter. So I've got one more set I want to go ahead and put in just to make sure that we've got everything down. All right. So notice as we list all of the drivers here, we do list versions as well. This is going to be extremely handy for determining when we need to actually update our store with new drivers. So one thing that we do have to do after we update drivers and packages is that we have to update our deployment share. But before we do that, I want to go ahead and add an update here. So we'll do this under packages. So I've downloaded a security update. Now, we could do this manually. There is a way to do this using an inbox Windows 7 tool called DISM. In order to do that, you would actually have to mount your WIM file on your deployment work machine. And then actually extract the MSU file, and then you actually go ahead and run DISM with a lot of command lines to go ahead and update that driver into your WIM file. We make this a lot easier because all we have to do in this case is point to the MSU file. Now, one thing you notice is that the browser didn't actually point out the MSU file when we browse, so I just pointed to the root of the volume, and we'll actually do a scan to pick up everything that's there. So one thing to keep in mind is that we do provide MDT as a free download on Microsoft.com. So while we see an issue here where it didn't actually show me the MSU in the UI. This is something that can get you deployed with no extra cost to you and get you a stable deployment for Windows 7. Now, where we can take this a step further is if you have System Center Configuration Manager, we can do integration with MDT and provide other options. So by default, MDT will support what is called light touch installation. So what that is that we do have a few moments where someone is going to have to be at the machine to click next or provide some information for the installation to complete. System Center Configuration Manager provides a zero touch installation option where the installation is fully automated. So I've got my updates in here. I've got my drivers ready to go. Now I want to go ahead and update my deployment share. Now this can take a while, depending on how much data you have, whether the deployment share is local to the machine or actually residing on another share somewhere. We do have the option to compress this data. For this example, we're just going to go ahead and choose the defaults. So what this does is we're going to go through, we're going to pull all of the driver packages that we've added. We're going to remove anything that may have been removed since the last time the deployment share was updated. And we're also going to generate the LightTouch ISOs and the WIM files that you can use to help with your deployments. Now, the LightTouch ISO is a bootable CD that you can take to a client machine, boot off the CD, and then it'll actually goes out to the NDT deployment share to go ahead and pull down your image, your applications, and your drivers. The WIM file can be used as a boot image for WDS, for example. And also, we do a flat file dump. So what you can do with this is actually go format a USB stick, make the partition on it active so that it's bootable, and then you can actually place those contents on the USB drive to have a USB deployment mechanism. So this may not fit every environment depending on security regulations, but it is an option that's available to you. And just to show you where that's stored, I've just got my deployment share on C for lab purposes. You really want to put that on another drive other than the system volume for performance and capacity reasons. But for this lab example, it works just fine for me. So once you get into your deployment share folder, you're going to go into the boot directory. Here we have the LightTouch PEX64 ISO and the WIM file. We also have the x86 version. In these architecture directories, here is where you'll find your boot information in order to create your USB stick. And then what you'll do is use the WIM file in place of boot.wim for that particular boot drive. So let's see. This is still running along, and this can take a while. And I just have a little bit of data on here. So, but this is also a virtual machine that is running on a laptop that is not necessarily best suited for it. But again, we're talking dev and test with a specific scenario, so it works just great.
Cool, that's awesome. That's killer. Yeah, so you mentioned this tool is free. If you'll send me the link to it, what I'll do is post show, I will make sure that anybody that emails topp@microsoft.com, again, that's topp@microsoft.com, gets the link to this tool. So if you're out there and you're listening to this and you'd like to play with this tool, just shoot us a quick piece of email, and I'll email you a link to the tool. Also, if you have any questions for Rob or myself, I'll be glad to answer those. And I'll give you that email address again at the end of the show.
Yeah, there have been a number of tools that we've talked about today, the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, the Application Compatibility Toolkit, the Automated Installation Kit, all important tools that all tie together with our deployment technologies to ensure that you have a successful deployment. We'll make sure all of those links are included as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be killer. So you heard it here first, guys. Shoot us a piece of email, and we will respond with an email with links to all of these tools for you. All right, so that's awesome, Rob. Thanks for showing us that stuff. Guys, I just want to make sure that everybody understands that this is part one of 3-2-1 Deploy. We're going to pick up where we're leaving off today in our next episode, which we're going to try and get out there for you guys within a few days after the first episode airs, because we don't want people saying, okay, I'm at 3 months. What do I do? So we're going to get part two out as quickly as possible. Again, I just want to make sure that everybody has the email address. That's Taste of Premier. It's topp@microsoft.com. Again, that's topp@microsoft.com. If you have any questions about anything that Rob has talked about during this episode, or you have any questions for me, or any questions about anything that we've discussed in any of the previous episodes, you know, please, please, please feel free to email us. We live for that stuff. We love getting email from you guys. And if you have any questions, you might just get your question answered in the podcast. Okay, well, so I'd like to thank Rob for joining us today. This is going to be essentially the end of part one of 3-2-1 Deploy. And Rob, we'll have you back for part two here shortly.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Lex.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for coming out. You know, this is awesome, and I really appreciate you doing this for us. So with that said, thanks, everybody. Hope you have a great day. You know, we'll see you next time.